Well, thank you very much. As the choir is finding their way back to their seat, I want to commend Jed Holland and for being the orchestra leader for a very outstanding production of Sound of Music in our community over this weekend. He had several members of the church in his orchestra with him. Jed, that was a really wonderful job. I know you got another matinee this afternoon, so you'll be taking out of here after that. But one of the many ways that we relate to our wider community here. So thank you for that. Well, when I was considering the title of today's sermon and service, Honoring Veterans Working for Peace, I thought, why not get somebody in here who's actually done both and who knows a good deal about both? So I'm very pleased to have Nathaniel Brooks sharing his thoughts on this subject today, both as based on his experience as a World War II veteran and a very ardent peace worker throughout his life. When I say throughout his life, I believe Nathaniel now has the distinction and honor of being our oldest member at the age of 93. Nathaniel, it's wonderful to have you here today.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you. My hearing aid snapped about 5 minutes ago, so I can't hear me, but I hope you can, and I'll count on the technicians to keep the sound at the right level. November 11th was set aside to honor those who served in our nation's wars. The date commemorates Armistice Day, when in 1918, the guns went quiet to end World War I. I was merely 5 months old then. I was merely 5 months old, but World War I had already played an important part in my life. The war had begun in 1914. And for the next three years, Americans debated whether to get into it. At a rally opposing entry into the war, my mother and father first met, and lo, I am here. In my later childhood, I came to understand that the war had been simply a contest for dominance in Europe, no more moral than a gang war, and how bloody it was. Of 65 million combatants, 37 million were killed or wounded. This knowledge first shaped my feelings about war, and those feelings were confirmed by subsequent wars in the 1930s. I learned to be skeptical about declarations by governments and to question the motives of their power elites. So for some years, I joined with other students to work for peace. Then came the attack on Pearl Harbor. 2 weeks later, I volunteered to serve in the Army. At that point, I thought it was a necessary war, and to be true to myself, I should get in promptly. Along with 16 million others, I served in the armed forces until 1946. Now, as a veteran, as a UU, as an old man who has seen much, I would like to share some thoughts with you as we consider Veterans Day 2011. A bit of history. Armistice Day, whose message was primarily promote peace so we never have war again, that's a quote, was renamed as Veterans Day in 1954, a time of Cold War, and honoring military service became the main theme rather than seeking peace. We in the national organization, Veterans for Peace, and that is the cap I wear, Veterans for Peace, say, thanks for honoring those who served and honor them further by working to end wars. Unfortunately, the holiday is sometimes misused to glorify militarism and war. Politicians say words like, heroes who have kept us free and safe, heroes who have kept us free and safe. In my view, none of this statement is true. Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan were no threat to our safety. War times made us less free, and our soldiers are not heroes, not for lack of bravery. Many of them are, but because the task they were assigned and required to carry out is evil and ugly, not heroic. I don't fault the soldiers. Indeed, I deeply care for their well-being. But I am angry with those who sent them to kill and perhaps be killed and then employ flowery phrases to mask their guilt and to entice a new group of young people. We have been told that American troops will return from Iraq, quotes, with their heads held high, proud of their success. Heads held high? Yes, they will be happy to be home, and we hope they are well. Many of the soldiers who already returned have had severe and sometimes crippling injuries. It is estimated that half of them have brain surgeries or are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. They come home to find a depressed economy with few jobs available. So I say, we sent them and now we owe them the best care and support we can provide. Proud of their success? In what ways did the invasion of Iraq succeed? For no reason that can stand the light of day, that country, that people, was torn apart and heavily destroyed. Considering our most basic UU value, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, war is the greatest obscenity and an intolerable offense to morality. So where does one begin? To bring change to any established way of doing things, it is important to understand who benefits from the status quo and who loses by it. So who benefits from our wars? Clearly, the corporations that provide the war materials and services, and also multinational corporations that gain favored access to foreign markets, cheap labor, and natural resources, oil, for example. On the other hand, what does it mean for our general population, now called the 99%? Sons and daughters sent to war, deaths, injuries, long-term health problems, and taxpayer costs in the trillions for wartime and after-war costs. While some jobs are created to meet military requirements, Economists say to us that if the same dollars were spent on peacetime needs, considerably more jobs could be created. More importantly, while dollars spent on war are blown up or otherwise wasted, they could instead be used to improve our economy and quality of life through such things as renewable energy, clean air and water, high-speed rail, well-equipped schools, and much more. Instead of such advances, war costs increase the deficit and create pressure to cut spending on social needs. When Defense Secretary Robert Gates retired in June, he said, "We need to decide," and I quote, "what is the kind of role the American people, accustomed to unquestioned military dominance, want their country to play in the world?" A good question. Do we want to continue maintaining and expanding an empire, spending as much on our military as all the other nations of the world combined, manning hundreds of bases around the world, and viewing ourselves as the ultimate judge and police in international relations? Recently, we see new forms of warfare: drones, preventive assassinations, that is, killing somebody who you think may wish to harm you in the future, so-called humanitarian wars. What do we think about these? How to deal with lurking dangers posed by nuclear weapons and the possible militarization of space also challenges us. In our congregation, we should create opportunities to learn and talk together about such complex and urgent questions. And very importantly, we need to speak to our youth, who are the prime target of militarists, and also our best hope for new thinking and change. Help them to think about bravery, heroism, patriotism, how these qualities may be expressed in times of peace, and how they are distorted in wartime. People sometimes ask, can we hope for a more peaceful future? I believe we can, because human beings are intelligent, and if they are not swept away by manufactured fears, they will increasingly come to realize that war is not the answer. And for a real danger, they will seek every reasonable outcome other than military conflict. A greater readiness to challenge war already emerged during the Vietnam War, when popular opposition reached unprecedented levels. For decades following, Washington spoke of the Vietnam Syndrome, as though people's unwillingness to start another war was an illness. More recently, while the American public was misled, there were massive demonstrations around the world opposing an invasion of Iraq. Today, polls tell us that the majority of Americans want out of the current wars. The ultimate goal of abolishing war may seem beyond reason. Consider, however, that slavery, which was part of human existence for thousands of years was eventually declared intolerable. And while there are still occasional examples of people being enslaved, they are considered a violation, not just of international law, but of human morality. The same is true of chemical warfare. And I think torture and then capital punishment will follow in this century. I may be too optimistic, but as our minister often says, so may it be.
Thank you very much, Nathaniel, for your thoughts, for your service, for your very wonderful life that continues to enrich and nurture the life of this congregation. I have just a few closing thoughts of my own before we bring our service to a close. During the Second World War, the poet and playwright, now late poet and playwright, Archibald MacLeish, was the Librarian of Congress. He was asked to write a poem for a ceremony the Library of Congress was planning to hold to honor the lives of those on its staff who had been killed in that conflict, one in which, as we already know, Nathaniel served, as did my father, as did one of my uncles, both of them now deceased. I won't read the whole poem, but there are a few lines I find myself coming back to. This is MacLeish's "The Young Dead Soldiers Do Not Speak." They say, "We were young. We have died. Remember us." They say, "Our deaths are not ours. They are yours. They will mean what you make them." They say, "Whether our lives or our deaths were for peace and a new hope, or for nothing at all, we cannot say. It is you who must say this." I think we should take the late Mr. MacLeish's words and challenge to heart. How do we give meaning to lives lost in war? Or I should say wars, plural. Wars fought, in the case of World War II, to check the rise of fascism when all other means had failed, as well as wars fought for less compelling reasons, in which, as Nathaniel stated, the safety, the security, the well-being of our country did not stand or fall on their outcome, as they truly did in the Second World War. And yet we think of the human lives lost in all these conflicts, as well as those who survived them and came home, those who are still coming home, some of them to healthy and productive lives, others grievously wounded or emotionally traumatized. How do we take up MacLeish's call to give meaning to these lives, to all of these lives? Well, yes, we truly honor and respect them, those lives, whatever the circumstances under which they were lost or diminished. And can we also take from them some hard but necessary lessons? Can we take from these lost lives a renewed commitment to be ever more vigilant, ever more discerning when the drums of war begin to roll, as they inevitably and periodically seem to do? Can we be the voices that call us back from the brink and say, wait? Is there a better way to deal with whatever the issue or conflict may be? Do we need once again to put young lives in harm's way? I do not say this as a pacifist, but rather as a citizen of this nation and of the global community in which we all live, who believes that armed conflict should be the absolute last resort when all other means of resolution have been exhausted and when no other alternative exists. If enough of us, I feel, can see our country and our world through this lens, We will indeed give meaning to the lives of those who have fallen. Bob Dylan said it some 50 years ago, and we heard it earlier today. He was certainly not the only one to raise the question, how many deaths will it take till we know that too many people have died? I love the song. I consider it to be the anthem of my generation. But I hope the answer is not just blowing in the wind. I hope the answer is also in the hearts and minds of peace-loving people everywhere who will pause and think and speak and act so that young men and women of the coming generations will be able to serve our nation and be able to serve our world to the very fullness of their days rather than having their lives cut short in yet another war. So that's it, as I see it. Again, with thanks to Nathaniel on this Veterans Day and Armistice Day weekend. Honor the lives of those who served. Give thanks for their service. Remember lives lost. And rededicate our efforts to building a redeemed and reconciled and peaceful world. With those thoughts in mind, let's sing together hymn number 139, Wonders Still, the World Shall Witness.